Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Assistant Secretary for Aging at HHS, Josefina Carbonell. Also joining us in our conversation is Brenda Kunkel. Josefina, we understand that the Older Americans Act is currently being reauthorized and modernized. How will this change aging services?
Well, I think that first, before talking about reauthorization, I want to put this in some kind of context as it relates to our current long-term care system. Currently, the long-term care system is really institutionally biased. It really focuses on institutional care. And chronic disease, although, you know, the incidence of chronic disease is really on the way to decreasing for boomers, people are living longer than before. The reality is that the inevitable condition of aging would bring chronic condition as one of the biggest challenges in chronic care, one of the biggest challenges that we have for the demographics of aging in this country. I think that the goal to keep people and to assist people to live longer is to assist them to take care of their chronic conditions or to manage their chronic conditions better. So our goal to modernize long-term care, which is basically the centerpiece of the reauthorization of the Older Americans Act, goes along with the reform and the transformation and the modernization that has occurred with Medicare. And it is simultaneous to the changes that we are trying to implement in Medicaid reform. So again, it will be a parallel movement to ensure that we transform the long-term care system from an institutional medical model only system to a more integrated model where we will have not only the supports, but focusing instead of just on services or a caretaking role to more of empowering people and assisting people to plan ahead and a more consumer-directed option. Putting the consumers front and center. So again, number one, the role of the reauthorization and our reform and transformation is really targeted at the capacity of our nation to respond to the aging of the baby boom generations and then, of course, future generations as we look at that. And then, of course, to be able to reflect those changes, we need to really transform the Act from an institutional-based program, which obviously, unfortunately, it's financially unsustainable, mostly due to the unintended consequence that Medicaid has become the primary payer for long-term care services in this country, yet it only covers 12% of the population. But the reality is it's unsustainable. And it's really based on an old demographic model. We're living longer, so therefore that paradigm has changed and the goals should change alongside with it. Currently, it's very complex, very fragmented, and difficult for people to understand. And most importantly, again, it's heavily based on institutional care when we know that people want to remain in their communities and in their homes independently as more possible. So there's three key approaches to that we're using, or three key principles that will drive the real authorization proposal, which is called Choices for Independence. Again, we're shifting from institutional care to consumer-based and community-based care. Number one, most importantly, is that we will empower individuals to make informed decisions about their care options and to help them access the care that they need. And that includes not only dealing with the older people right now, because the Act allows us to reach a younger population than retirement age. It gives us the opportunity to reach people at younger age or at middle age. There's still time to make some planning changes in your both your financial security, but also in your long-term care planning goals to be able to meet the needs in the future. We're also making sure that to enable to turn the tide around, both on spend down of people to Medicaid or on a direct link between hospitalizations and nursing home, is really provide and target services those at highest risk of nursing home placement before they become eligible for Medicaid, but most importantly, before they become disabled and on a down track to more dependence and spend down. And then thirdly, we're trying to enable people to make behavioral changes that really reduce the risk of disease and disability as they age. We know that our older population and our seniors are much healthier than their former cohorts were. We want to keep that. We want to be able to also deploy the best science and the best evidence-based prevention science that we have, that we invest through our institutes of health at the department and our research and science institutions across this country and the medical technology and health technology to be able to keep people at home and empower them with the right tools that they can simply be able to assist themselves, and then really target public dollars at those at highest risk, and again, at those that are most needed.
The theme of empowerment certainly comes through very clearly. How does the Administration on Aging support seniors on Medicare policies and programs?
One of the things that I found out early on is obviously our partnerships is so crucial to an agency such as Administration on Aging, because obviously aging crosses all the sectors that we work with. We can't do this alone. So one of the agencies that we have been closest to in partnering since the early times have been the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, particularly on the Medicare portion. Number one, most importantly, our network or the network of our providers provide the majority of the insurance counseling for both Medicare and Medicaid products throughout the country. And most importantly, the network has worked very closely with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, most recently to help inform, educate, and assist in the enrollment for the new Medicare drug benefit that came online January this year. And then the second portion of our work and our partnership with Medicare is and has been and will continue to take a more important role in the future with the new Medicare benefits in assisting people in how to make best use of the prevention and the chronic disease prevention benefits that have been put online and have been brought in to the new Medicare law, and assisting people to make sure that they get their vaccines, that they have access to the kinds of new benefits that have come online, and that we assist them in how to navigate and access those new preventive benefits that keep people healthy in their communities.
Great. One of the areas of collaboration between AOA and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services that you mentioned is the new federal benefits, prescription benefits program. How would you characterize the implementation of that new program?
We're very pleased with the outcome. We've worked very hard. The Administration on Aging and our partners in the community has been a tremendous effort where not only have the communications, the ads, and the efforts done under Medicare was important. I think the partnership that we developed with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services gave us the grassroots local community support that was so needed for particularly our seniors, our older seniors, our seniors, our low-income seniors, which are a very difficult population to reach and to assist in educating about this new benefit. So the partnership that we developed early on, working together, adding value, and adding, most importantly, a very critical part of the work that we do, it was a natural for us at the Administration on Aging to partner as part not only of our statutory role as the lead aging advocate throughout the government, but most importantly, as a very effective bringing down that personalized assistance to the individual Medicare beneficiaries played a very key role in achieving 90% enrollment of 38 million people by May 15th. And the work continues. It hasn't stopped. We're working through, particularly with our low-income communities, where we know that the majority, about half of the people that still had not enrolled, are eligible for the additional benefits. So we continue to work with those communities and rural communities in limited English-speaking communities where we know that More people need to be assisted through this effort. And again, at the end of the year, we will continue to work in the second phase of the enrollment period. So we're very pleased that even in those most vulnerable populations, we achieved 3/4% enrollment in the Hispanic community, in the African American community, in the Asian American community, where you have so many languages. It was very rewarding to see that the work had paid off. And most importantly, that paid off because that personalized assistance was there at the community level. And also in the private sector, it created opportunities, greater opportunities for enriching the partnerships at the community level, private and public partnerships, where you saw municipalities coming together with banks and other business sector community in assisting people to enroll, either because they were lending them the computers at the community level to access, or they were lending staff resources of volunteers, or they were partnering with community colleges and universities to bring their service down to the community. So it was very exciting, and has been very exciting, and has opened up other avenues of further collaboration that are going to very much serve us as we move forward with, obviously, creating better access, better information, and better consumer empowerment.
Josefina, we only have about a minute, but I want to touch upon something that you mentioned earlier, which I think is very important for seniors, and that's this whole issue around financial protection and financial security and fraud. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing in this area?
We run the Medicare Patrol programs, which are really another fantastic volunteer and certified volunteers, which assist us in educating and preventing healthcare fraud, and assisting people in understanding their Medicare bills and making sure that they get the kind of services what they purchase. We know that the vulnerability of many of our seniors are tied directly to their functional status. So we know as people age and become frail and dependent and homebound and isolated, they're at highest risk of being abused financially, whether it's a caretaker, whether it's a family member, or just the opportunities are abound to be taken care of, to be really taken advantage of. We also run elder care programs and the legal services to assist people, about their rights, but most importantly, to protect them. We have developed a whole, we run the nursing home and ombudsman program, which is another huge program that we serve as ombudsman for nursing home and long-term care independent living facility members, and we are the conduits and independent body to assist the elders and their caregivers in problems that they're having in facilities. And we work very effectively to educate, but also to assist. We worked again with Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services in their implementation of their quality improvement initiatives, both in nursing home and in home health care, to use the ombudsman program as another avenue, another support, adding value at the community level, adding local resources that people could turn to be able to support them in questions or problems and challenges that they were encountering.
Great. How is the Administration on Aging tracking results? We will ask Assistant Secretary Josefina Carbonell to share the details when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.